So our gospel reading is from Luke 2, verses 15 through 21. When the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let us go now to Bethlehem and see this thing that has taken place, which the Lord has made known to us." So they went with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the child lying in the manger. When they saw this, they made known what had been told them about this child. And all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds told them. But Mary treasured all these words and pondered them in her heart. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen, as it had been told them. After 8 days had passed, it was time to circumcise the child, and he was called Jesus, the name given by the angel before he was conceived in the womb. The word of the Lord. In Bridget Jones's diary, there's a place where she makes a note. She makes a few notes to herself. And basically, the content of the notes is something like, buy books by unreadable literary authors to put impressively on shelves. Develop inner poise and authority and sense of self as a woman complete without boyfriend. Since very best way to obtain boyfriend. And she... This is funny, right? Because often we say this to people, like, you'll if you're lonely, feeling complete in yourself is the way to draw people to you. Like, you won't be the empty, needy self, which there's probably some truth to it. It's just, who really succeeds at that? She also writes, be assured, receptive, responsive woman of substance, knowing my sense of self comes not from what other people think, but from me, myself. Question mark. Wait, that can't be right. I mean, we're in this conundrum, right? Because we want to tell people, we want to tell ourselves that, hey, you can't base your identity on what other people think. But that's, on some level, impossible because we're social creatures, right? And even if you can, you tend to be a dreadful person, right? There's this story that Winston Churchill, his valet, his driver, was rude to him. And Churchill said, you were just quite rude to me. And he grinned and said, yes, sir, but you were first rude to me. And Churchill said, yes, but I'm a great man. So the few people that actually can have the sense of self that's really independent generally tend to be jerks, right? I mean, because on some level, that level of insensitivity leads to something akin to inhumanity. So the conundrum is you need this sense of approval or this sense of connection to other people to feel complete, and yet it seems tyrannical, right? Like, if the answer isn't this sort of esteem yourself in a way that you're the only critic that matters, but it also, you're left seemingly imprisoned if you are completely dependent on other people for your sense of who you are. It's interesting, this passage in Numbers. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord bless you and keep you. You know, one of probably the most famous blessing story in the Bible is the story of Jacob, where he actually deceives his father, whose eyesight has failed him, into giving him his older brother, slightly older brother, just by a hair at their birth, into giving him his blessing. But what is the blessing? There's the sense in which it's this affirmation of the entirety of his being, that he's the son, the child of the promise. And this is what we all want to know, right? But this is, the funny thing is this, the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord bless you and keep you, make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. Moses is the one that hears, no one can see the face of God and live. In fact, Moses says, show me your glory. And God says, I'll just show you my back parts, whatever that means. But there is this sense, and what we want is the you know, it's interesting, developmentally, if a baby is not held and mirrored enough, it will cause all sorts of psychological problems. There's this I-thou-ness that human life needs to develop and to thrive. And I think it's an echo of what we all need. We all want the divine gaze. We want the I-thou. We want the face of God to look at us and to affirm who we are. And yet, it's like the person, it's interesting because this concept of the wrath of God, I don't know that God changes dispositions as much as, you know, someone, when you've wounded someone and they look at you lovingly, their loving gaze actually can feel like a searing fire. And they haven't changed their gaze or the meaning behind it. But because your proximity to them has changed because of guilt and shame and feeling terrible for wounding or betraying and then all of a sudden their loving gaze becomes unbearable. And I think this is part of what happens in our waywardness, is that the love of God and the gaze which wants to bless us and affirm us becomes something that seems like the face of judgment. I came across this great column this week by Ross Douthat, who is a New York Times columnist and often has really great things to say. And he was talking about, it's kind of his Christmas column, and he was talking about all these people who had weird experiences of the supernatural and yet didn't become religious believers. Like the guy who made The Exorcist before he made the film The Exorcist, he had never seen an exorcism. Afterwards, he decided to shadow the chief exorcist of the Vatican, and it freaked him out. I mean, he didn't become a religious believer, but it did erode some of his skepticism about the supernatural. And so Douthat in this column gives several examples of people like this and then concludes with these words. The implausibility of hard materialism doesn't mean the cosmos obviously confirms a Judeo-Christian paradigm. And the supernatural experiences of the irreligious, cosmic beatitude, ghostly enigmas, unclassifiable encounters, and straight-up demons don't point toward any single theology or world picture. I can make the Friedkin and Verhoeven experiences fit with Christian doctrine. Ayn Rand's aren't perhaps as distant as she imagines, but Ayer's weird red light and the ghost of Peter Kaplan, these are examples he mentions in the article. If I were coming to these kind of stories with no preconceptions, I might reach for polytheism or pantheism to explain the variety and diversity of what reaches through the veil. And not necessarily comforting forms of polytheism or pantheism. As a strictly intellectual matter, I am very confident that God exists. In dark times, though, and this has been a dark year in many ways, I wonder if the absolute relates to us in the way that my church teaches. If he will really wipe away every tear and make all things that we love new. This is the wager that Christmas offers us year in and year out. It isn't Pascal's famous bet on God's very existence. Rather, it's a bet on God's love for us. A wager that all the varieties of religious experience, wonderful and terrifying and inscrutable, should be interpreted in the light of one specific history-altering experience, a divine incarnation, a baby crying beneath a pulsing star. The odds on that wager feel different year to year. They change with joy and suffering, tranquility and crisis, sickness and health, but I haven't found better ones. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, indeed, the one who, in the words of the apostle, thought that equality with God was not something to be exploited, but emptied himself, taking the form of the most fragile thing. Babies, it's such an interesting thing. None of us remember our early infancy, at least consciously, but what a reality to be capable of grabbing the attention of these people so much bigger and more powerful than you just by screaming, and yet not being able to control your bodily functions and not being able to crawl or move. And it's just this amazing combination of consciousness and fragility and finitude. And the fragility and the finitude, we might get better at controlling our body functions, at least on our good days. And we get better at moving around and things like that. But we never really get over being fragile and finite. And we never quite get over the scary things that happen to us early on that elude our memories when we're the most fragile and finite. But the comfort we can take is that God had the decency to take a dose of his own medicine, and that the means of our redemption is God's entering into the fragility and finitude, that we might experience the infinity of his love, and that his countenance for us in Christ would not be one of judgment, but one of blessing. Merry Christmas.